Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, February 13th, 2014. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, homebrewer Carl Kornfeld joins us to talk about his experiment fermenting a beer using nothing but a sourdough yeast starter. He also shares a fun Star Trek-inspired beer. If you're new to homebrewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. You can find me on Twitter. I'm Basic Brewing, all one word. Also, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james, and our show page on Facebook is at facebook.com/basicbrewing. We're on Google Plus, too. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon, think of us first. And go to our website, basicbrewing.com. Click on our Amazon ad. That'll take you to Amazon. And you can, whatever you shop, we'll get a piece of, and it won't cost you any extra. We greatly, greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site as well. We also have an app. Our Basic Brewing iPhone app is on iTunes, and our Android app is on Amazon.com. We're on the BlackBerry Podcast Directory. We're on the Stitcher app. We're on the Windows Phone Directory. We're just everywhere. Click our Check out our Brewer's Logbook at BasicBrewingShop.com. In the front is a blank calendar that you can use to track your fermentations and plan your brews. And there is room in the back to log the details of up to 50 batches of beer. If you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our guitar case, you can go to basicbrewing.com/support. Thanks to everybody who has done so already. You can protect your precious beer with one of our growler bags. Check those out at basicbrewingshop.com. Lots of frozen weather in the American Southeast right now. Tons of people out of power. Luckily, it looks like they're staying off the roads for the most part, if the pictures are accurate. I got this email from Troy in frozen Atlanta. Troy says, so I brewed an Imperial Red Sunday, and now it seems that I'm going to lose power to the ferment fridge, making the 64 degrees drop to about 50. So when the yeast drops out and I'm still at way high gravity, am I just going to be screwed? Well, I don't know. I don't know what yeast you're using, but I'm assuming it's an ale yeast, and it may go to sleep when it gets too cold, but I would hope that it would wake back up if you rouse the yeast back up into the beer when it gets warmer again. I've never had to do this myself, but I'm sure that there are listeners out there who have had to do this in the past. So give Troy some advice if he has if he gets frozen down there in Atlanta during all this icy weather and his beer goes to sleep. Can he just warm it back up to proper fermentation temperature and swirl it back up? Drop me a line. Let me know of your experience in trying to wake up sleepy, cold ale yeast. The beer cheese episode is still prompting email. This one comes from Colin DeLau, maybe? Colin says, as a professional cheesemonger, now that is something you want to put on your tax form. Professional cheesemonger. That's pretty cool. As a professional cheesemonger, I was also extremely intrigued by your January 23rd episode, Beer Cheese. I wanted to share another take on combining cheese and beer that we do here at Standard Market in Westmont, Illinois. We have an award-winning cheese cave. Yet another phrase that I enjoy, cheese cave along with cheesemonger. We have an award-winning cheese cave, which is designed to age cheese in the optimum environment. We have taken a cheese called Tommy DeNana from Kenny's Farmhouse in Kentucky and washed it in a local beer from Solemn Oath Brewery. We're also currently working with Revolution Brewing in Chicago to develop a second beer wash cheese. Colin says these cheeses differ from what your guest did in that these are natural rind cave-aged cheeses. The American block cheddar that your guest was working with does not typically form a rind. And the rind is key because it's there that the menagerie of bacteria, yeasts, and molds grow and multiply. When we wash a beer in cheese, we hope to incorporate some of the beer flavor, but we also hope to use the beer as a vehicle to get us to the next step in cheese aging. Very cool. Sounds very tasty. I got a word that my session proposal on small batch brewing has been accepted by the AHA for the Homebrewers Conference in June in Grand Rapids. Steve and I, between now and June, will be doing some experiments that I can talk about during that session. Very exciting about that. And, of course, I'm obsessing about that. I want to make it worth your while to come to my hour-long session on small batch brewing. Also exciting is the fact that I started a new batch of homemade sauerkraut yesterday. Well, it's exciting to me. It's been a while since I did sauerkraut. It's silly that it's taken so long because it's so easy to do. I followed the same process that Steve and I used in our Reuben Deconstructed Basic Brewing video episode from May 28th of 2012, and that was inspired by mad fermentationist Michael Tonsmeyer. Can't wait for that sauerkraut to be done. Okay, let's talk to Carl Kornfeld about a couple of fun beers. The first is an experiment using nothing but a sourdough starter to kick off fermentation. Carl Kornfeld, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me on, James.
You did something that that I've thought about doing in the past, and we've talked to Michael Tonsmeyer about doing something similar. You have combined bread and brewing into one experiment.
Yeah.
Tell us what you did.
A little over a year ago, I made a very simple pale malt-based beer and pitched a sourdough bread starter into it and then just kind of let it run for a long time and wound up with something that was pretty good at, about 180 days, something like that. And, well, let's see, 157 days was the best one. So what I did was I did a three-gallon batch. I mashed 5.5 pounds of pale malt and put in half an ounce of Cascade at 30 minutes. And give me a OG of 1060. And what's the other note here? The IBU ratio was 0.3. So the idea was that since it was going to be a sour beer, I wanted a low IBU to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because bitter and sour don't really mix very well.
Right.
So I pitched that and just left it, let it go. And 98 days later, I bottled a few, which tasted okay, but it wasn't really... tasted like it had further to go. It wasn't really sour at all. Had a little bit of sweetness to it. Checked it a couple more times and finally bottled again on 157 days later. And that was, in my opinion, pretty good. Had some good sourness, bready aroma, kind of a Belgian character to it. Eventually, let's see, the last time I bottled it was 211 days after pitching, and that was pretty awful. the air I let in from the previous bottlings just got to it, and so I just got this really overpowering smell it across the room, kind of raisin sherry aroma that was nasty. I wound up dumping that. But the one I sent you is the one from 157 days, and that's actually one I'm drinking right now. So,
oh, cool. Well, I'll open mine, and give me some background. Do you bake a lot with sourdough starters?
Recently, yeah. Within, I don't know, past year and a half. Somehow, I don't know, 15 years ago, I became bread guy for family gatherings and holidays and things like that. Not even sure how it happened, but it just, I'm the guy that always brings bread to that stuff. And then, I guess about a year and a half ago, I started doing sourdough and remembered an old podcast that you did with Michael Tonsmeyer, where he kind of mentioned off the cuff, just kind of, oh, in the old frontier days, they used to throw sourdough into their beer to ferment it that way. And so that kind of got me thinking, hey, why don't I try it?
And we've got to give Michael Tonsmeyer a plug. He's got a new sour book coming out. And I think if you go to madfermentationist.com, you can find information on that. I think it's available for pre-order. I think I saw him tweet something about that. So get your order in early. But, yeah, so much Tonsmeyer is such an inspiration to, you know, so many homebrewers who are doing funky off-the-wall stuff like this.
Yeah, just the idea of being free to experiment. He really inspires that way.
And I looked on his site, and there was an entry where he used a sourdough starter as a part of brewing a beer, but I think he also pitched some regular beer yeast in there as well. But there's nothing in this but the sourdough starter, right?
Correct. Yeah.
So here it is. I've got it. It's perfectly clear. It's nicely carbonated. The head didn't stick around for very long, but it's got some nice kind of lacing on the side of the glass, and it looks like a pale ale. It's kind of a light, what would you call that? Kind of a dark straw color, maybe?
Yeah, straw, maybe gold.
And it smells, let's see, slightly bready, but more kind of floral, I'm going to say.
Yeah. That's what I get.
I'm going to take a taste.
I'm holding my breath.
Oh, it's no. It's good. Oh, it's what is that? Oh, It's sort of it's tart.
Mm-hmm.
It's not overly sour, but it's nicely tart. It's got kind of a, what is that? It's got kind of a fruit. I kind of want to say watermelon.
Really?
Either watermelon or.
See, now I have to taste it again.
Or maybe my mind is just trying to say Jolly Rancher to me, and maybe it's kind of a. It's a Jolly Rancher's kind of flavor. Maybe it's like the green apple. Maybe it's like the green apple. Jolly
Rancher.
That.
Yeah, I can see that, the Jolly Rancher green apple kind of flavor in there.
But it's not, you know, green apple is a defect, you know, that you don't want to taste in most of your beers. But I wouldn't call it a defect here. It's tart, but it's not cidery. You know, it's not like that. It's not when I say green apple, you might think of apple cider. No, but it's not cidery.
I think of it more like some of the apple notes you'll have in a wine.
Yeah.
In that sense.
You know,
the malic acid kind of.
So walk us through the fermentation. I mean, how big of a blob of yeast starter did you put it? And was this a fresh yeast starter, or how did, or was this one that you'd used a couple of times, or how does that work?
Yeah,
I've never ordered
the one
a
I've been
starters.
Making. It's the one I've been making bread with for a while. And I pitched, where is it here, 150 milliliters, which is 5 fluid ounces, or 144 grams, or 5.5 ounces by weight.
We've got everybody covered.
I knew I was going to need that at some time, so I wrote it all down. In retrospect, that was probably underpitching a lot because the starter has a lot of gas in it while it's active. So if I was to do this in the future, I'd probably at least double that.
And again, this is for a 3-gallon.
For 3 gallons,
yeah.
And I did have visible signs of fermentation within 24 hours.
Wow.
I had a, it wasn't a strong Croizen, and you know, not the real lava lamp kind of thing that goes on with normal beer.
Right.
It was a lot slower than that. And where am I here? 72 hours. What Croizen there was pretty much gone. But there was sort of a little bit of a crust, not really a pellicle, but a, you know, little bits of Croizen and some foam that stayed around, and were still there 11 days after it was done. And then I just sealed it up and let it go. Checked it a couple weeks later, after 22 days. And it was still pretty sweet at that point. In fact, my notes say it tasted underbittered, because it was that sweet. The main thing I wanted to check then, though, was to see if it had like a spoiled sort of taste, and it did not. That's in my notes, too. It does not taste spoiled. And then I just kept letting it go.
And you took a gravity reading at that point, at day 22,
yeah,
right?
22, it was down to 10.10 from 10.60.
Which is pretty good.
yeah, that would be where normal beer would be. You know, if it was a normal beer, I would have bottled it. But with how low I hopped it, obviously I needed more of the sweetness to get out of there. And then very little change until, day 98. Well, no, let me back up a bit. Day 76, it had gone down to 10.06, but I couldn't really taste much difference in the taste. It might have been a little bit more sour. Then day 98 was down to 10.04. Sourness was pretty prominent then, low sweetness. Day 127, I finally had a pellicle. I don't know why it took so long to get there. But, and that was down to 10.03. My note says a little more sour, decided not to bottle yet. So I waited till day 157. And still at 10.03, pH might have been a little bit lower. I was using strips, so it's hard to tell. Had a nice sour flavor, and so I bottled 12, and that's the one I sent you. So that's pretty much the story.
Yeah, it's nice. I mean, it's very drinkable.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of the Sour Mash Berliner Weiss.
Okay.
That we did. The second one. It's nice. Like I say, it's nicely tart. There is there's kind of a fresh apple snap to it. You know what I'm saying? You can imagine just tasting like the apple skin.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, because the apple skin is a little more kind of tart.
Yeah, and like a Granny Smith.
Yeah.
Little bitterness. Kind of bitter skin flavor, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if that's tannic or not, but I like it. It's very interesting. I'm just amazed. I mean, if it started out at 10.60, it's what, 6.5? What?
7. I show 7.5.
7.5. Yeah. So it's not a small beer.
No.
But it doesn't taste alcoholic.
Right. Yeah. I wonder if that's the sourness kind of masking that. Because normally at a 7.5, you'd have a bit of a bite in there.
Right.
Even with a lot of malt.
But that's tasty. But it's got plenty of body.
You know, and I don't know where it comes from because it fermented everything else.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not thin at all, even though the gravity is that low.
Yeah.
Mm. That's very tasty.
So when I first brewed this, or when I first tasted it, it was just kind of, oh, there's that weird beer I made that one time. And then a few weeks after that, I gave one to some friends, and they loved it. And so I figured, you know, I think I emailed you when I first started this experiment, and then said, oh, yeah, I better get back to James and tell him it didn't go so bad, I guess.
So. Now, did it change? Has it changed over time in the bottle?
Not as far as I can tell. I don't have a BJCP palate, to be honest. But as far as I can tell, it's been pretty stable. I've kept them all in the fridge, so they're not doing a whole lot of aging there.
Now, what was the starter that you used, and where'd you get it?
I had tried to start my own sourdough starter a few times and failed. And it turns out that was probably just impatience. So I went on Amazon and got, let's see, where is it? Cultures for Health New England sourdough starter.
Hmm.
Hoping that it would not change too much on its own, because, you know, it would... Presumably, it kind of drifts to whatever your natural environment provides.
Right.
So I don't know. I'm sure it's changed somewhat in the past year and a half.
It would be really interesting to get, say, like a San Francisco sourdough starter and see what kind of beer, what kind of influence that has, whether it's more sour.
Yeah, or just compare it to somebody who has a... you know, their own local starter that they've been working with for a while.
Yeah.
Every part of the country should have a different natural culture. So
the local microflora.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it gives me some encouragement, because I have this project that I'm working on. And I think I might have mentioned it on the show a few months ago, when we had figs on our fig tree. I made a starter and took a fig off my fig tree and put it in
you did mention that.
Yeah, I put it in like a liter starter and let it sit overnight. And I took the fig out and put it in the starter in an Erlenmeyer flask and put it on the stir plate. I've got it right here. So I'm going to smell it and compare. It's got a pellicle on the top of it.
Oh, okay.
And I've been kind of afraid of it. I'm going to smell it. And it kind of smells like your beer.
Really? Okay.
It's a very floral smell. In the beginning, it smelled... kind of like nail polish remover, you know?
Oh, okay, yeah.
But that calmed down, and so now it's smelling kind of more tame and less scary. So I'm thinking I want to put that into something.
Yeah, I'd try it, definitely.
So did you smell the airlock as it went along, or did the smell of the fermentation change over time?
Not appreciably. It smelled basically just like a kind of funky beer while it was fermenting. I didn't disturb it between my test samples.
So if you had anything else to do again, I guess one thing you might do is try to purge the fermenter with CO2 every time you opened it to take a sample or whatever. That might
I'd probably, if I did it again, since I know it was good at 157 days, I'd probably just leave it for 150 days or 160 days without touching it at all.
That's a good point.
You know, since I know that was a good one, I could take half and then purge it again and you know, purge the all the oxygen out and see if it changes for the better if I let it go longer. But, you know, since I know that's a good one, what I'd probably do is try variations on that based at, you know, 160 days.
So what did the tube in the fermenter look like? Did it look anything different from a regular fermentation?
Not really. It was just kind of powdery. Probably like a Hefeweizen yeast. So just, you know, it'd been sitting so long it wasn't really disturbed. It had time to sink down.
Right.
I always use whirl flock, so that makes everything look a little bit the same anyway. So, but it did, yeah, it was a little more powdery than, say, a really flocculent yeast, but, you know, nothing really unusual. It didn't look like anything was crawling around in it or anything.
Nothing sticking its head up from the depths of the tube.
Or at least it got out of the light when I lifted the T-shirt up first. I think the first thing I would do if I was going to do it again is add some wheat malt to try and build the head a little bit more.
Oh, yeah.
You say you have a little bit of head. Mine has none at all. That was a little disappointing because the very first bottling I did, which wound up a little bit sweet, did have a really nice creamy head. But this one has zero. And so I figure wheat malt would give some protein in there to build that. Where if I try to do it with caramel malt, then most likely I figure the bugs would eat the dextrins and kill the head there.
Yeah.
So.
Well, speaking of wheat, you sent another beer.
I sent another beer.
and what's this one called?
This one is called Quadro Triticale Ale.
And I'll pause to let those who get the joke laugh,
or roll their eyes.
Now, quadro triticale is what the tribbles got into, in the old Star Trek episode.
Yeah, James, I there's no delicate way to put this, so I'll just come out and say it. I'm a bit of a geek.
There's no shame in that.
Oh, I appreciate you saying that.
No, you've heard this show.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a geek, and I have geek friends. In fact, the friends who helped me get into brewing in the first place are geeks also. And one of the things I thought of for fun at the very beginning when I was doing this was I was going to give all my beers kind of Star Trek or Klingon themed labels. And for the most part, I've done that for almost every beer I've done. It's kind of a branding idea. So I had the idea of trying to figure out if I could make a beer out of Quadro Triticale, which is mentioned in one of the old Star Trek episodes, as you know.
Yeah.
And so triticale is a grain that was developed in the 1930s. It's a hybrid of wheat and rye. The idea was to, you know, it was during the Great Depression. They wanted a grain that had the northern growing range of rye, but had the higher yield and higher protein content of wheat. And it didn't really catch on, although it's still used mostly for as a grain feed in Canada and I guess Siberia or something like that. But you can buy it for human consumption. And so I got some of that, and figuring that it's a cross between wheat and rye, I used rye malt and wheat malt and then a little bit pale malt to kind of give the idea of four grains, so I can call it Quadro. Why not? So for this one, for 5 gallons, I used 2 pounds of each of those grains. And where am I here? half an ounce of Warrior at 40 minutes and 3/4 of an ounce of Cascade at flameout, and used Ringwood ale yeast to ferment this.
So was the triticale, was it malted?
No, it's was flaked.
Oh, it's from, I see.
Bob's Red Mill is a flake cereal, actually.
So I'm pouring it down. There's no tribble remains in there.
I don't know how it's going to taste after the sour.
Oh, yeah.
It's, it's not one I would think of blending with the sour. So.
It's a little more golden than the a little more golden and a little more hazy than the sour. And the head sticks, or the head has no problem sticking around with the rye and the wheat. And no big surprise.
Yeah, the haze will be from protein, I assume.
Smells hoppy. That's tasty. Yeah, it's going to take my tongue a little while to switch gears.
Yeah.
But no, the bitterness level is nice. That's a good drinker. That's
Yeah, I've made it a few times. I like it. I've tried a few different hopping schemes. My favorite version of it actually used Glacier.
Oh.
But I think the Cascade works well, too.
Yeah, that's very nice.
Thanks.
The I just want to sit and drink now. Pardon us while we recline for just a little.
Is that why you have a beer podcast?
Shh. Yeah, I'm going to start a cookie podcast too.
Yeah.
Pastries, cookies, and other unsavory things that I'm not going to mention on this show. Okay. a non-food related.
So it's the different grains give it, to my palate, a flavor that reminds me of multigrain bread. Yeah, I don't know if you're getting that.
Well, the hops are pretty up front with me.
Well,
right,
especially
now,
compared to the sour, which had almost no hops. So.
That's good. It's got a nice malt backbone. The carbonation level is fairly high, so it's it tastes fairly dry, but yet it's still got a nice level of body on it. So very nice.
Thanks.
Again, always a relief when I get homebrew from people I don't know, and it's good.
Always a relief when somebody tastes my beer and says it good. So,
no, that's tasty.
Thanks.
Very nice. And very clever name and very clever label. So, do you think you'll do any more experimenting with the sourdough?
Yeah, since people actually like it, I'll have to. Like I said, when I first did it, I just thought it was some, you know, once in a while I'll get an idea and I have to try it just to find out what happens. It wasn't until I gave it to friends that they actually said it was really good and liked it. So it's, you know, that's a couple ideas I have. You know, like I said, I think I need to pitch a lot more, and I don't know if that's going to change the way it tastes. Add the wheat malt and a couple of different hops things I could try.
Yeah.
Want to keep the bittering low, but certain flavors might work well with it. Like sriracha might, the lemon flavor of sriracha might go well with the sour.
And also, you wouldn't think that you'd want to have too many hops in there because you don't want to suppress the microorganisms that are in there. You don't want the hops to get in the way of their work.
That's a good point. Yeah, I actually hadn't thought of that.
But that's just me out of my nether regions again. Just making assumptions on what I've heard.
I'll have to keep that in mind, that if I do late hop it, to make sure it stays light enough that it's not going to kill anything.
But you could. I wonder what this would taste like if you put some fruit in there as well.
That could be something worth trying.
Who knows? Ooh,
Yeah.
I went back to the sour. That's tasty. Well, very good. Nicely done, Carl.
Thank you, James.
And keep us posted if you do another round, because I'm interested. I think that this what with homebrewers starting to do their own lambics and things out of wild yeast around their
Right.
areas, and using these sourdough starters, especially sourdough starters that come from your own bugs.
Yeah.
I think we could really get sort of some homebrew terroir,
Yeah. Yeah, I think it'd be fun to compare, either done with, like you said, beers like this done with different cultures or just from different parts of the country with people who've been using their starters for a while. Interesting comparisons and fun to taste.
There you go. Well, very nice. I appreciate your sharing the experiment. I appreciate your sharing the beers. Thanks, Carl.
Oh, thanks for having me on, James.
Thanks again to Carl. Yet another example of a smaller batch size being used to come up with something very tasty. More fun stuff coming up next week. We'll head to Iceland to talk about high-tech brew in a bag. Till then, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Our Basic Brewing Growler bags are available in our shop. Protect your precious homebrew and craft beers. You take it from place to place. Check out our support link, where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcasts. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Basic Brewing, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. We've got combo deals to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time. You can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store, too. Our Brewer's Logbooks are in the store as well. Keep track of up to 50 batches of beer. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that purchased through the link are Sensitive Plant Heirloom Seeds and Totally Bamboo Round Salt Box. Thanks again, everybody. Remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We greatly, greatly appreciate your support. And don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and also subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine through our associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer, production help for Basic Brewing Radio, and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.